Good morning, everyone. Great to see all of you. Can we kind of look around and wave to each other? And welcome anyone you're seeing. It's great to see Irene here. Well, welcome back. And of course, all of you, but especially great to see you. And of course, Joseph and your family, welcome. As Jan said, we're always so glad when you're here. It's great to worship with you. And I really appreciated the music this morning. It was powerful. And I appreciate it. Hope you've been having a good July, a good month. It's been nice to have some cooler weather. I thought that, you know, we're not in the 100 plus degrees a lot of people are in. So I've been enjoying that. And I hope you've been enjoying the Parables of Jesus series that we've been going through. I've found it interesting to explore some of these parables, some of them very familiar that we've heard a lot, some of them probably a little bit less so, especially as we keep going on. But to review what we've seen so far, we're on our third week, and we started with the parable that we normally call the Good Samaritan, and I called the sermon, "Who is My Neighbor?" And that's what we did our first week of July. And there were two questions I asked in that sermon to review in case you weren't here or just to review. But who do you struggle to see as a hero? Since I think one of the major points of that sermon was the idea that they wouldn't have expected the Samaritan to be the hero. And we looked at for us, who are the people that we might not expect or normally, you know, put in the role of a hero? And then the second one, as you see up there, what kind of neighbor am I? And am I the kind of neighbor who helps? Am I the kind of neighbor who reaches out? Am I available? And so on. And so that's what we looked at the first week. And then last week we looked at the question of, is God fair? And this was the parable of the workers in the vineyard. And so we looked some at pay and, you know, what does pay look like for different kinds of work and so on. We looked at the question, how do you respond to unfairness when you see it, when you experience it? What is your reaction? What is your response? And we made the point last week of not to envy God's grace for other people. And so God's favor for someone else, God's mercy, which for all of us is unmerited, but so often only becomes a problem when we see it for someone else. And we feel it should have been for us. And we kind of struggle with that. And the recognition that God is not always fair, the way that we see fairness, the way that we define fairness. But that's a good thing, because if God were fair, then all of us would be in trouble. And today we're moving to a couple other stories, and these are ones you've probably heard before. And so I'm going to read from Luke chapter 15. I'm going to read from verse 1 to verse 10. So we're going to look at the parable of the lost sheep and the parable of the lost coins. And you should be able to follow along on the screen as well. It says this in Luke chapter 15. It says, "Now the tax collectors and sinners were all gathering around to hear Jesus. But the Pharisees and the teachers of the law muttered, 'This man welcomes sinners and eats with them.' Then Jesus told them this parable. Suppose one of you has 100 sheep and loses one of them. Doesn't he leave the 99 in the open country and go after the lost sheep until he finds it? And when he finds it, he joyfully puts it on his shoulders and goes home. Then he calls his friends and neighbors together and says, 'Rejoice with me, I have found my lost sheep.' I tell you that in the same way, there will be more rejoicing in heaven over one sinner who repents than over 99 righteous people who do not need to repent. Or suppose a woman, verse 8, has 10 silver coins and loses one. Doesn't she light a lamp, sweep the house, and search carefully until she finds it? And when she finds it, she gathers her friends and neighbors together and says, 'Rejoice with me, I have found my lost coin.' In the same way, I tell you, there is rejoicing in the presence of the angels of God over one sinner who repents." Have you ever lost something that you found that was very valuable to you? How long did you look for it? And I know for BJ, she lost one of her wedding rings last year and was very distressed. And so we're still looking for it, but haven't come across it. So she had the engagement ring, and then we had two bands on either side when we got married. And so now she jokes that she's only two-thirds married, which I don't know what that means. But we're hoping we find it. But when you lose something that's valuable, you look for it, right? You look for it. And, you know, if something is very meaningful to you, say if it maybe doesn't have a lot of financial value, but it's very sentimental, then you feel like you've lost part of yourself. It's something from, you know, maybe your grandparents or something from someone very significant to you that they gave you at a significant moment. Then you attach a lot of significance to that. And so Jesus is using this analogy of looking for something that's lost to illustrate the character of God and to illustrate the action of God when God loses something that God values. And so as you look at the story of the lost sheep, that's my focus. We're not really going to look at the lost coin as much. I mean, they're quite similar in terms of meaning. But we're going to focus on the first part. And as we look at the story of the lost sheep, there's three things that I want us to look at. And the first one is that just as we look for our lost possessions, so God looks for lost sinners. That just as we look, as you know, I shared about the wedding ring, just as we look for our lost possessions, God looks for lost sinners. Because that's what God values. If you lost your child, how long would you look for your child? And I saw a story this week in the news. I don't know how many of you saw this, but there's a man in China who has been looking for his son for 24 years. 24 years ago that his son was abducted. His son was actually kidnapped. And he has never given up looking for him. And his story became fairly well known. And a few years ago, in 2015, they made a movie of it. And I'll ask if we can play the trailer for that. And I'll direct your attention to the screen so you can look at the movie they made of this story. And then I'll share a little bit more about it.
<音>安徽省佛山县佛山林镇那家村人，1999年9月20日下午10点左右，在那家村被拐。现年是七岁，小雷达，那达的可以失踪啊。
15 years. When I first read about this story, I cried. I wept. And what happened? And when he was 2 years old, his mom was cooking, so his son was just playing outside, and he was taken. This was on September 21st, 1997. And so his dad was frantic, and so his dad with his mom, they searched for months. And so eventually, and you know, all their neighbors and friends helped them to search, and they looked all over the region. But after several months, you know, they kind of, the others stopped, you know, focusing as much and kind of gave up. But he didn't. And so you can see the picture of his son when he was two. And so he made the banners and he put them on the back of a motorcycle. And he spent 24 years looking. And he never gave up. He wore out 10 motorcycles. He went more than 300,000 miles. He formed a national organization to find lost children. They actually uncovered dozens of other children who were abducted but never found his own. But he never gave up. And he said, no matter what, I want my son to know that I'm looking. And then just this June, through DNA testing, they actually found his son. And they recovered. And I'll get back to this in just a minute. But he did not give up. And he continued looking. And that's what God does. I mean, so Jesus uses the metaphor of sheep. And I think, you know, obviously we're not exactly like sheep, but there are ways in which sheep are an apt metaphor for our behavior. If a sheep does get lost and get stuck, often they'll just kind of lie down. They'll give up. They might, you know, cry out, which is actually dangerous because it'll attract, you know, lions or predators that will eat the sheep. But the sheep will not be able to find their way back. And often for us, it's the same. If we get lost, if we get stuck, someone has to find us. We won't find our way back on our own. And that's the image that God is using here. It's the image that Jesus is using for how God looks for us. Earlier we showed the video of the 23rd Psalm, which is familiar to many of us, and it uses that image of us as sheep to illustrate God's care for us, the water that God provides for us, the grass, the protection, the provision that God gives to us. And that's how God cares for us. So Psalm 23 is one of the, there's a number of passages in the Old Testament that look at this image of God as shepherd, us as sheep. And there's another one that Jesus was drawing on. It's probably less common for us. And so I'm going to read it. It's from Ezekiel 34. And so this is a prophecy. And this is what it says. I'm going to read the first six verses. And so Ezekiel he was prophesying against, sharing the words of God against the leaders of that time, the time he was living in. And it says this, Ezekiel 34 in verse 1. The word of the Lord came to me, son of man, prophesy against the shepherds of Israel. Prophesy and say to them, this is what the sovereign Lord says. Woe to you, shepherds of Israel, who only take care of themselves. Should not shepherds take care of the flock? Verse 3, you eat the curds, clothe yourself with the wool, and slaughter the choice animals, but you do not take care of the flock. You have not strengthened the weak, or healed the sick, or bound up the injured. You have not brought back the strays, or searched for the lost. You have ruled them harshly and brutally. So they were scattered, because there was no shepherd. And when they were scattered, they became food for all the wild animals. My sheep wandered over all the mountains and on every high hill. They were scattered over the whole earth, and no one searched or looked for them. And so this is a harsh indictment of the failure of Israel's leaders to care for the people. The role of a good leader is to keep the people together. It's to keep the people unified, to keep the people moving forward, to care for those who are in need. And at this point, they were failing to do that. And as Jesus is sharing this to the rulers of Israel at his time, he was highlighting their failure as well, that they should be the ones searching for the lost, just as was said in Ezekiel. And so God went on in this prophecy, which was, you know, much before the time of Jesus, to say what he was going to do. He was going to hold the shepherds accountable. But in addition, he said this in Ezekiel 34, verse 11. For this is what the sovereign Lord says. I myself will search for my sheep and look after them. As a shepherd looks after his scattered flock when he is with them, so I will look after my sheep. I will rescue them from all the places where they were scattered on a day of clouds and darkness. I will bring them out from the nations and gather them from the countries. And I will bring them into their own land. I will pasture them on the mountains of Israel, in the ravines, and in all the settlements in the land. And so that's what God promised to do. And he sent a shepherd. He sent his own son to do that, to find his lost sheep, wherever they might be. He talked about the nations, the countries, to bring them in, to bring them back together. And that's what Jesus came to do. So just as we search for something that's lost, actually much more so, God searches for his lost people. The second thing I want us to notice from this passage is this, that the salvation of lost people is a cause for celebration. It is a cause for celebration. In the beginning of chapter 15, we get a clue for why Jesus told these stories, the context he was saying it in. And it's as usual, it's the complaints. The Pharisees, the religious leaders, they're complaining that he's with the sinners, he's with the tax collectors, he was eating with them, he was visiting them in their homes, he was having a good time. And they thought this was, to them, that they just found this the height of impropriety. That he would be seen with such people, that he would eat their food, and that he would have fun, that he would drink. He'd drink alcohol, he would tell stories, he would hang out. And they just couldn't stomach this. They couldn't fathom why he would do this. Now the question I have for us, I mean, do we celebrate the work of God in us? Do we celebrate the work of God in other people? Is our time together, is it marked by joy, by celebration? Because that's what God desires, that our time together would be a celebration. That joy would be a defining mark of us. That's what people would see in us. How do you think you would celebrate if you recovered your lost child? What kind of a celebration would you put on? In the story I looked at, I mentioned earlier, after 24 years, Mr. Guo, he was reunited with his son last week. It was July 11th, last week, 2021. There's a picture we have of his reunion. It was covered in the news. If you look for BBC. And then they were finally reunited. This is what he did. Ahead of the reunion, a dazed Mr. Guo and his wife brought more than 1,000 pounds of candy to distribute to neighbors in celebration. He cleaned out his house. He tossed out old belongings to commemorate a new beginning, to mark the difference between the time of searching and the time he was found. This is what he said. He told a television host, Ms. Chen, he was content with whatever the future brought. He said, our child has been found. From now on, only happiness is left. I mean, that's a parable, isn't it? I mean, it just sounds like one of the biblical stories. It's similar in certain ways to the prodigal son, the lost son that we have coming after this. But it really did happen, and it happened to him. And so how do you think God would celebrate when he recovers one of us, one of his children? How many pounds of candy would God get to distribute? You know, he bought 1,000 pounds of candy to celebrate. Because he wanted others to see the joy that he had. He wanted others to join in, to participate, so they could celebrate together. And I don't know exactly what parties in heaven look like. I don't know what kind of candy they eat or, you know, how that works. But I know that we celebrate, that they celebrate. And we're told the angels in heaven rejoice more over one person who's found and over 99 people who do not need to repent. And so they celebrate. The third thing I want us to note, the final thing that I want to draw to your attention, is that the existence of those who are lost gives us no excuse. I'm sorry, the existence of those who are safe gives us no excuse for not searching for those who are lost. And there's an obvious difference here between the 99 and the one, right? So it's not like he lost half, you know? It's not like he lost half the sheep and had to look for them. But he lost one. 1% of the sheep were missing. And yet he left the 99 to go and pursue them. Now, if there was any risk, there's some debate over, you know, the exact meaning of this. But if there's any risk for the 99, it wouldn't have made any sense to go look for the one, right? I mean, what if you go look for the one and then you lose five while you're away? I mean, you've lost, right? But because of the one, he left the 99 behind and went and searched for the one. Now, what if we think of this parable from the perspective of the 99? Yeah, and I've given a way that this might have looked. So this is one of the 99, and now they're telling the story. They said, today was a great day out in the field. We had some good sunlight and water. The breeze was great. Our shepherd gathered us together in the evening. But as usual, Larry didn't want to go to bed. So he went gallivanting off. He went exploring. And it's happened before. I'm sure it'll happen again. And so the shepherd left us all there, went after him, finally found him, brought him back. And you know the worst of this is I don't feel like Larry learned anything. If anything, I think his behavior was rewarded. And I don't know what the shepherd sees in him. I wish he'd just let him go. He doesn't add anything to the flock, in my opinion. But I'm sure in a couple weeks this will happen again. And I'm giving some interpretive license here because I'm assuming the sheep left. Now, in our story, we're not told that. Now, we're not told. We're told the sheep was lost. We don't know if the sheep was taken, if the sheep wandered away. It's not clear. Now, there is another version in Matthew. This is shorter, so I'm going to read this for us. And this version is a little bit different. And it says this in Matthew 18, verse 12. It says, what do you think? If a man owns 100 sheep and one of them wanders away, so you can see, it's a little more explicit here, wanders away, will he not leave the 99 on the hills and go to look for the one who wandered off? And if he finds it, truly I tell you, he is happier than that one sheep he finds. Then the one sheep, then about the 99 that did not wander off. In the same way, your Father in heaven is not willing that any of these little ones should perish. And so in both of these, I mean, the 99 is just so disproportionate to the one who's lost. Now, it is possible that they were in some kind of an enclosure. We're told in Luke that they were in an open country. So that kind of implies that there's some risk, right? I mean, they weren't, you know, in the fortress or, you know, in the barn. They were in the open country. So that implies there's some risk. There may have been another shepherd there to keep watch over the 99. That's possible. We don't know. We're not told in the story. But it certainly seems that there's some possibility of risk for the 99. But that the one was worth it. That he valued the one. And I know I've talked about this before, and I'm sure I'll talk about it again, but there's always that balance between inreach and outreach. I mean, for us as a community, there's great value in us connecting, and that's one of the reasons we do our barbecue and other events. For us, you know, keeping up with each other, sharing how we're doing and all of that. But there's always that balance between the inreach and, you know, the visiting each other, getting to know each other and all of that. With the outreach, I mean, seeking to find others who are not with us, who are not a part of our family, who we don't know. And so for Jesus, there was always that balance as well between, you know, bonding as the 12 that they did do, but then also reaching others and connecting to new people. And for us, we always have that responsibility of reaching out to those who we don't know yet, reaching out to those who have not found Jesus, those who have not found their way to God. And that's why we're here. It's why we exist as a church. It's our role as people. And I know for us to look at people as lost, I mean, that's a kind of pejorative title, isn't it? I mean, it's implying that they should be somewhere else. And our, you know, in our culture today, I think it's, you know, probably less and less acceptable to say that. But even at the time of Jesus, I think saying someone was lost, it was still offensive then, right? Like, I don't think people then would have liked that label any more than people now. But Jesus still used it because of the importance that it signifies. That anyone who doesn't know God, anyone who has not come to God, is in that sense lost. And God desires to find them. And so the loving thing for us, the loving thing for God, is to keep looking for them. And it begins with love. I think you see in this that the shepherd valued that sheep individually. He knew, for one, if you had 100 sheep, do you think you could tell if one was missing? Like, it might not be that easy to tell. Have you ever tried to count 100 sheep? It's quite a few. By the time you get to like 90, you know, you're like, wait, did he move? Like, you know, you'd have to know your sheep pretty well to recognize if one of them was missing. You'd have to care for each one, and you'd have to value them to be able to know who was missing and to be able to find them. And that's what a good shepherd does. And so all of us matter to God. I mean, God knows when one person is missing, and God cares, and God will look for that person. And it also involved risk. I mean, some risk for the shepherd. We don't know where the sheep was. It could have been in a dangerous place. It could have, you know, fallen down a steep hill. It could have gotten stuck somewhere. It might not have been easy for the shepherd to get there. There might have been other dangers involved for the shepherd to find him. And for us today, there are always risks in reaching out to a new person. The risk of rejection. The risk of looking silly. The risk of, you know, people thinking something about us. And so there is that same risk for us today. But the risk is worth it. And so we have to overcome, you know, inhibitions or, you know, whatever else can keep us from connecting with people, from looking for those who are lost. But with God's help, it is possible. And with God's help, we can do that. And so as we close, just remember that God is always looking for those who are lost. Whether it's you, whether you're listening to this today and you feel that you've drifted away from God and God is looking for you. Or whether you're in a different position, and whether you're maybe a little bit more like me, well, you're probably more likely to be the 99. And then the question is, how do you view God going to look for the one? And how do you process it? You know, maybe a little bit more like some of the stories, like a story we looked at last week. And so our mission is to continue to look until all are found. To review what we've seen today, if we can bring this up. Just as we look for our lost possessions, as I said, God looks for lost sinners. The existence of lost people is a cause. The salvation of lost people is a cause for celebration. Finding them is worth celebrating. And the existence of those who are safe gives us no excuse for not searching for those who are lost. Even if we have a good number, 99 is a decent flock, it's no reason to say this is good enough and to let the one go. And so to give you something to reflect on, who are you praying for to find their way back to God? Who comes to your mind? Is someone in your family, someone you know? And then how can you partner with God to bring them back? What would it look like for you? Does that mean primarily praying for them? Is there another active type role that you can take in order to facilitate that? And what would it look like? And each situation is different. But how can you participate? So if there's a human father who can look for 24 years, who can wear out 10 motorcycles, who can go 300,000 miles, then how much more would God look for one of us? So please pray with me as we close. Dear Lord, I thank you for the message of hope that we have, that you love us, that you know us individually, and that you will look for us tirelessly. You continue to extend salvation to us, and that you continue to care for us, O God. So I pray for each one here. I pray that if there's anything in our heart that is keeping us from you, anything that we need to confess, anything that needs to change for us to go deeper with you, for us to reconcile with you, for us to be right with you, I pray that we can do that. I pray that we can take whatever steps we need to do in order to come back to you, O Lord. I pray that if there's anyone we know who is lost, who has wandered away, who's drifted away, maybe they've been taken, whatever it looks like, that we wouldn't tire until they're found, just as you don't. So I pray that you would renew our strength. I pray that you continue to bless us as a church, to bless us as individuals, to push forward in serving you and to push forward in helping those in need around us. So I pray that you would be glorified, O God. We thank you for all that you're doing, and we look forward to what you continue to do in our hearts. And I pray that we would experience your action in our lives, your moving, your transformation in us. And I thank you for that. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen. Amen. I'll ask Joseph and the team to do our closing song, and then Joseph will end the service.